The Laughter Permitted podcast is brought to you by Ally. Do it right.
Hey there, welcome to Laughter Permitted. I'm Julie Foudy.
I'm Lynn Ozawi. Hello to the Dope Village. Jules, this episode I thought was cool for a couple of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
One, we did Laughter Permitted old school style where we were at a table in person. Mm-hmm. There were donuts.
Old school. First interview actually like that. Since what? March? Pre-COVID?
March 2020, pre-COVID. Yep.
Jeez.
And the other cool factor about this episode is it features someone you would just want to hang around a table with and talk because she is super smart, thoughtful, funny, and is making really positive change in the world. And that is not an understatement.
CP. Mm. Our guest is U.S. Soccer Federation President Cindy Parlo Cohn. And Cindy and I played together on the U.S. Women's National Team for many years. She is a Hall of Famer, two-time Olympic gold medalist. She also is a 99er. Yep, she won a World Cup in 1999. And Cindy played collegiate soccer at, don't hold it against her, the University of North Carolina, where she was a four-time All-American, two-time national champion. She's also gone on to become a title-winning coach at all the various levels, grassroots, collegiate, and professional levels. And now she is the first female president of U.S. soccer. And by the way, the first national team player to hold that position. And Cindy's impact literally has been immense. She was instrumental in getting the men's and women's teams to equal pay, which we talk about, and is now working to affect systemic change in the game as we talk about the findings of the Sally Yates Report and what needs to happen going forward. So get comfortable listening. It's Cindy Parlo Cohn. Hey there, Dope Village. As y'all know, Ally has backed Laughter Permitted since day one of our podcast as our financial ally. And honestly, Lynn, I might just tattoo Ally on my forehead. And Ally is currently on a mission to change the game for women sports.
And get this, along with being sponsors of the National Women's Soccer League, Atlantic Coast Conference, United States Golf Association, and the Las Vegas Aces, Ally has committed to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And you, my friends, can be part of the change by watching your favorite athletes crush it on TV, by going to women's sporting events in person, by, I don't know, maybe listening to every single episode of this amazing podcast on Trailblazing Women, because every time you show up for women's sports, you are helping move the game forward. You can learn more about Ally by visiting ally.com. Hey there, Dope Village. Lynn and I have been involved in women's sports our entire lives. And truly, we've never been more excited for what's to come in this women's sports space. And one big reason, Ally. Ally has made a commitment to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And that means more money going to women's sports and more visibility for what these incredible athletes are accomplishing. Ally is on a mission to change the game for women's sports.
So here at Laughter Permitted, we're going to keep telling the stories of trailblazing women. And every time you listen in, you are part of that change. To learn more about Ally, go to ally.com.
Kick back, relax, and unwind. Let's have a good time finding the joy in life. So bright, talking and laughing combined. Feeling alright, get comfortable listening. It's Laughter Permitted.
We're in person.
Yes, finally.
And for the record, we have donuts for the first time in a long time because we haven't been in person, but I didn't get them.
And I didn't eat them.
You didn't eat them. I'm not that nice. You're not that hungry.
You're correct.
Janae Blackburn got them for us. ESPNW Summit Tradition. She always brings me donuts. Isn't that sweet?
That is very
it's
kind.
One of my friends who's always comes. She's awesome.
It's a good way to buy your love.
Yeah, it is. I'm so easy. It's so easy. It's that obvious, isn't it?
Cindy, can you set the scene of where we are?
Yeah, we are in beautiful Ojai, California. Mm. I have never been here before, but it is absolutely majestic. We are here at the ESPNW Summit, and we are hanging out in person in Julie Foudy's cool suite.
Like full disclosure, this is the swankest suite I have ever had.
It's pretty
My sister staying with me. We walked in. We were like, what? And the bellman was like, settle down, sister.
Same. When I walked into mine, I have two like full size tubs. My kid who's 5 years old, I'm like, it's like a swimming pool to him. It's so big. And I was like, two tubs, like there's only one of me.
We're at the very nice Ojai Valley Inn.
Yeah, it's very nice. Thank you, Ojai Valley Inn. Thank you, ESPNW, for the summit. Okay, but then we were talking about how long you've been president. You have been Madam President of U.S. Soccer for 2.5 years. Is that right?
Yeah, since March 2020.
How's it been? Do you want to lie down on the couch?
instead of donuts, we might need some wine for this. no, you know, it's been hard. I mean,
yeah.
There like some really heavy things that we've had to deal with as a federation. But also, like, I just feel so proud that I'm actually in a position to affect change and to make a difference in our world.
That's not being paid for either.
That's not what?
That doesn't get any money.
Oh.
Which still just irks the friggin' hell out of me.
It irks you. It blows my mind. The U.S. soccer president is an unpaid position.
Yeah. And, I mean, I'm going to underestimate this. I'm guessing you spend at least 60 hours a week on it.
Yeah, I think in a slow week, it's probably around 60.
I mean, there's this whole thing of equal pay that.
We have to change that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just all consuming. And you know, I've kind of stopped saying, oh, if we get to this point or if we solve this issue or if we do that, then it's going to calm down. And it just never calms down. So, I mean, part of the thing is that we had a lot of big things that we needed to solve and we're still working to solve. And so it's not just all the time on emails, on Zooms and traveling, like that's a lot. But it also like the things that keep me up at night, like trying to like think through and solve it, like talking about equal pay, like the hours of sleep that I lost on that and like trying to figure out like how do we move this forward and just feeling like the weight of the world on my shoulders to like to figure out the path forward on it. Mm-hmm. It's heavy at times.
Mm-hmm. And we will talk equal pay for sure. But let's first talk about what happened a month after, which is crazy too, is only a month after the official signing of those CBAs, which we did after the U.S. Women's National Team game in Washington, D.C. on September 6th, I believe. About a month later, the Sally Yates report comes out. And of course, this was based on the Meg Linehan article and her excellent reporting that had come out a year prior. And because of that article where there was coach misconduct that two players, Mona Shim and Sinead Farley, reported. You guys hired, so you, Cindy, and the Federation hired Sally Yates, who's the former U.S. Deputy Attorney General, and her team to do an independent investigation. And it took them a year, but on October 3rd, that Sally Yates report came out. And I know you have been very emotional talking about it. I'm sorry to take you back to this, but I know it's also something that you think about every day, but what was your initial reaction to it?
You know, I think I had a lot of reactions, outrage, heartbreaking, just infuriating, and disgusted by it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a difficult document to read. Obviously, we got a glimpse at it with Meg Linehan's reporting, as you said. And once I had read that, you know, I knew that I needed the best kick-ass investigator there was, and they needed to be independent.
Was that your first reaction almost? We have to dive into this and get to the bottom of what's going on?
Yeah, you know, I'm a let's get shit done kind of president.
That's what I love about you.
High five that out.
I'm about taking action and trying to solve problems. And so, and I'll be honest, I didn't know how to solve the problem. I didn't even know. I don't like, it was such a, it was so awful that I was like, okay, what are the things that are contributing to this? What allowed this to happen and how do we change it? And it was really important to me to hire the best. And I think Sally Yates did a great job. She's obviously has a great reputation. She's purely independent, but she also has dealt with sensitive topics like this. And I knew she would take a victim-centered approach, which was really important to do as well. And we had two main goals. One, how did this happen? And how do we prevent it from ever happening again? And throughout the process, I made her promise me, like, if you find out anything that we need to change immediately, if there's anyone on staff at US Soccer in one of our leagues, let us know that we need to remove. And so, you know, she never had to use that. It's just been like a constant like thing that's been weighing on my mind. And like, how do we approach this? And the year waiting for Sally Yates, like I wanted to take action. Like that's my personality. Like let's solve this. But I didn't want to take action just to take action. I wanted to make sure that the action we were taking was going to prevent this from happening again. And so that's why I'm excited about Sally Yates' recommendations, and my board voted unanimously to implement them all. So we are full speed ahead working on implementing them all.
What was the experience like reading it?
Hard. You know, I've read it 3 times now, and I think my brain is like protecting me. Like I literally can't take it all in. People will say, hey, and they'll talk about a specific aspect of the report, and I'm like, that's not in there.
You know it that well? Or is that?
No, I didn't think it was in there, but it's in there. Mm-hmm. But it's like just.
It is hard to absorb it all.
It is really hard to absorb all. And obviously, I have dedicated my entire life to this game. And so it's very emotional and it's very personal for me. I coached Mana Shem. I brought her into the Portland Thorns, found her an open tryout.
Wow, I didn't know that.
She became a starter at Portland for me and contributed to the championship team in 2013. And so much of this story was very personal to me, and it was hard to absorb it all at once. But now it's been almost a month, and so I've been able to work through it. So now I do know it actually is in there. But it was weird, like how my brain was like protecting itself because it is so hard to read.
When you think about all that's in there, the thing that gets me too is the scope of it. I mean, one of the things that is chilling is Sally H says in the report that this abuse is normalized at the youth level. And she said that's out of our purview of this investigation, but it's something that US Soccer needs to look into. And so where do you even start with that? And what's the biggest challenge you see with it being? And I know this doesn't just live in the women's soccer silo. I mean, this is something that across the
much
board.
Much bigger than women's soccer.
Yeah, is across the board, you hear story after story in sport after sport. And not just in sports, of course. But what are the things that you're like, we've got to do this, and this is how we're going to tackle this huge challenge?
Yeah, I don't think it's one thing. There's no silver bullet to solve this. It's going to be a lot of different things, and it's going to require collaboration, cooperation, communication among many different people and entities. So we've set up a board committee led by Daniel Satan, a former teammate of Jules and me, to really focus on the recommendations that Sally Yates put forth to get those implemented as soon as possible. And then we set up a broader task force to look at exactly what you're talking about, Jules, the larger landscape of soccer in our country, and how do we really start to combat some of these issues that the normalization, as you said, in the youth game. And it's going to take a lot. Part of it is governance and structure and policies. Part of it is educating what is normal behavior, what is good behavior, what does a good coach look like, educating the parents on how to spot inappropriate behavior.
And speak up.
Yeah, and speak up and where to speak up, you know, educating the players, the coaches, the administrators, everyone on what is good coaching, what's positive coaching, where the line is between a coach who's a good coach and critiquing players versus abusing players. Like, I don't think it's
so sad that that's a line that has to be drawn. Yeah, I would imagine every one of us at this table has experienced some level of verbal abuse from a coach. Obviously, the level of abuse, as evident in the report, can be much more extensive, but that there is an acceptance from coaches. Is it a free pass? I don't know if either of you have thought about that. What is it that allows for that type of behavior to be acceptable?
I think you bring up a really good point. And part of it is culture. Right. And it's really hard to build a culture. We've all been on teams. We've all been a part of teams, and building a culture of a team is hard. Changing a culture, the culture of youth soccer, the culture of youth sports, there's not just one thing you need to approach or to change it. It has to have a holistic approach. And I'm really excited we brought on Mona Shem to lead this task force to look at the broader landscape and how do we do part education, part policy, governance, and look at all these different pillars within our sport and the culture, and how do we really start to change the culture?
And we accept too much as parents. Like, we look at a coach because they've had, to your question, they've had a successful career. Or this coach in the youth system has always won. And you know about those coaches. But, you know, they're kind of harsh, is what you hear from the parents.
Tough love.
Yeah, they're tough. You know, but, you know, that's what you got to go through because he's a really good coach. Mm-hmm. Or she's a really good coach. And so as parents, you kind of brush it off like, oh, well, they're successful. Like, maybe it's okay. And that's part of what Sally Yates talks about in the report, is how so many players talked about, like, well, that's just how it always was. Like, and parents never said anything because I want that D1 scholarship. I don't want to be the parent that, this is what they're thinking. I don't want to be the parent that speaks up and, you know, my kid's cut from the team or she doesn't play anymore. I mean, there's all these.
But I think it's also important to remember that this doesn't just happen at the elite levels. Mm-hmm. It doesn't just happen with kids that are looking to go to Division I colleges to play a sport, right? This is happening at every level of the game. I've seen inappropriate behavior from a U11 recreational coach. I think it's much broader than just the elite. I think it perhaps is worse at the elite level because there is so much more invested from the family and from the kids, and a sense of there's a lot more to lose at that level. But this is pervasive throughout youth sports. And so to tackle this, it's going to take a lot, and a lot of people jumping in, and we're going to need buy-in too.
What would be one tangible example of something that can be done that can start a ripple effect, or at least touch on something that can change?
I think one thing is educating, right? Educating parents, players, coaches on what positive coaching looks like, you know, and giving really good examples of bad behavior, and thinking about, like, your kid in math class. You know, if a coach comes out, we worked on this yesterday, why can't you do it?
Yeah.
Like, what parent would put up with that from a math teacher? Right? And I didn't even cuss, you know? but for some reason, when it's on the soccer field or basketball court, or you pick your sport, it has been normalized and that's okay. That is not okay.
Yeah, and that's important. This is the president of US soccer saying that is not okay.
And plus, if you went over and over it and the kid doesn't get it, there's probably something wrong with your coaching.
Right? Yeah, it's on you, coach, not them. As Billie Jean King, I saw her at the Women's Sports Foundation, said to me when she said, it's been a heavy couple weeks, hasn't it? And I said, yeah. really has. It's been really hard.
That happened right around the time of the Sally Hayes report.
Yeah, and she said, change can be painful, and this will be growth, and this will change what has been needing to be changed for a very long time.
I agree, and like I have hope that this will have a galvanizing effect and really motivate people to make the change that needs to be made. Like I'll give one example, the USOPC background checks, like to move to that standard of everyone in the soccer ecosystem doing the USOPC background checks. It's gonna cost people more.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a cost that we all should be willing to take on to try to add another layer of protection for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Will it solve everything? No, there's nothing that will solve everything. Right. But these are the types of steps and types of buy-in and types of investment that we need to make to do everything we can to make sure our kids are safe.
Speaking of investments and speaking of another thing on your plate as president over the last 2.5 years is the equal pay deal and what that means to the women's team, of course, to the men's team as well. And honestly, the thing that intrigues me the most is the ripple effect of this moment. Because, again, some context for listeners who may not know, Cindy was very instrumental as president in finally getting the CBAs, the collective bargaining agreements of both the men's and women's teams signed, and they were truly equal. A lot of federations have said they were equal. They are not equal. This was equalizing World Cup FIFA prize money, which was always the big elephant in the room because there was such a different payout from FIFA for the men being successful as there was for the women. And to get that done and the ripple effect that will have, you have to already be seeing that. What are you noticing?
Yeah, you know, I've had several different federations from other countries reach out to me trying to figure out how we got it done. You know, and it wasn't easy. I mean, Jules, we have been in this equal pay fight for over 2 decades together.
It only took us about 4 decades, honestly.
You know, and you know, obviously this was top of mind for me as soon as I became president, and it took me 2.5 years to actually get to this point. So it definitely wasn't a straight line. It wasn't easy.
How did you do it? Come on, give us the good dirt.
I don't think Cindy has slept in 2.5 years. That might be the secret.
I mean, how the heck do you get both of those teams to go, yes, we're going to sign this deal?
Well, I think there was a lot that allowed it to happen. I think one is that our men's national team was out of contract. So, and the women's national team's contract was coming to an end. And so we had this like moment in time that we'd never had before where both teams needed to negotiate their CBAs.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kept pushing to get to one contract. No one believed that we could do it. My team didn't believe it. You didn't believe it.
No, I love the idea.
You love the idea, but you didn't think we'd do it.
I'm like, yes, I love that one pot idea.
Yeah, my family didn't think we'd get to it. I don't think the players believed it. But I just felt like we had this moment in time, and you know, equal pay was forever going to be elusive unless it was the same. Because otherwise, if you have two different contracts, it's exactly. Always going to be like, where is equal? What is equal?
Yeah.
So for me, there was only one path forward, is to have one contract. I didn't get quite to one contract, but we got all the terms in both contracts the same. So I'm happy where we landed. I gave up on the one contract thing, but, you know, I think one of the turning points is when we drew the line in the sand and we said, there will be no new CBAs unless there is equalization of World Cup prize money. And, you know, I give our women's national team and their PA, the men's national team and their PA, a lot of credit for coming together and working together and figuring it out. You know, to have the three different organizations at the same table negotiating. I mean, I don't know how many of your listeners have ever negotiated a CBA, but it is exhausting and challenging. So there's not much fun about it. Negotiating two CBAs at once, people thought was going to be impossible. And by the way, the settlement for the women's national team litigation was weighing in the balance till after the CBA deals were done.
Right.
So there was a lot going on. Mm.
It's just an energy drain all around when you should be focused on, you know, winning World Cups or building the grassroots or building out, you know, these teams, these youth teams and all these things you could be doing. It just takes away all this money and time and energy from it. So I commend you for that. I think the challenge, and I'm interested in the duality of this moment, because you have, you know, this incredible moment where they're signing these CBAs on the field and these collective bargaining agreements for these players. And then just a month later, the Sally Yates report and comes out. So when you think about all that's ahead in the future, what does the future for soccer look like in this country going forward?
You know, I think we have great momentum and we're going in a good direction. We still have a lot of work to do. I think as a federation, we have kind of turned the Titanic, so to speak, and are moving in a positive direction. But as Sally Yates' report pointed out very clearly, like, we have systemic issues, not just in soccer, but in sports in general. And so we are facing them full on, full transparency in everything that we're doing. So the future of our sport, I think, is really bright, but we do need to solve a lot of the issues, because, you know, if the players aren't safe, nothing else matters, right? That is central to the importance of this, and who would want to put their kid in a sport when we can't guarantee their safety and emotional and well-being? So that is first and foremost for us, then what I'm looking to make happen over the next couple of years, because this isn't going to change in a month. Like, we're not going to solve this problem and by January, right? So this is going to take a long time. And as we're implementing these recommendations, we're going to figure out, like, oh, well, we need to do this too. That wasn't even a part of the investigation. And then we have the NWSL and PA joint investigation coming out sometime in the next couple of months, I guess. But hopefully they'll have recommendations. Yeah. So there's a lot that we need to do. But like I said before, I think this is really going to have a galvanizing effect. I've already seen it. Like, the number of people jumping in, you know, we started putting this task force together, and the number of staff members from US Soccer that jumped in and wanted to help, the number of emails that I received from people all across our soccer ecosystem wanting to be on this task force. So that was really encouraging and uplifting. If I put all of them on it, nothing would get done. So we have to limit it a little bit. But I think the future is bright, because now everything is out in the open and we know what we need to solve for. And no one, like, it's like you say about flash. We've pulled out the flashlight. We've shown the light on the issues in our sport. And so now we've got to work to change it, and we have to work with everyone.
Clearly, this is a pivotal moment in U.S. soccer. And how do you think your experience as a national team player gives you a different lens from previous U.S. soccer presidents?
You know, I don't think it's just my lens as a player. I think it's more holistic than that. I think it's my experience in the sport and everything. So from my experience as a youth player to college player to national team player, youth national teams, professional teams, but also my experience in coaching at every level of the game. Every team that I was on, whether as a coach, as a player, I was always learning, and it has impacted who I am as a person, who I was as a coach, who I am as a leader, as president of US Soccer. So, you know, we're here at the ESPNW Summit. So, like, it's really interesting to hear the different stories from different sports. And I think it's similar, like, and I know just being an executive now, and like every company is looking for athletes because of all the skills that they develop mm-hmm. through playing team sports, whether it's high school, college, professional, what have you. And I really feel like for me, that has impacted my ability to be a leader in this moment. It might not have been something that I like chose, but when it was thrust upon me, I was ready to lead.
We have two 99ers sitting here in the same room. So on behalf of the Dope Village, I would be remiss to not get some 99ers story out of definitely Cindy, and maybe Julie, you'd be kind to actually talk about yourself every once in a while.
No.
I can talk about Jules. What do you want to know? I got lots of stories about Jules.
So maybe either a favorite 99er story or something that reflects how it's impacted you now as a leader.
Oh, that's so easy. So my first training session with the national team, I was 17 years old. So of course I knew everything. And Tony DiCicco was our coach, and he was directing like where he wanted all the goals moved for the next part of the session. And Jules and Carla like sprinted to the farthest goal.
Oh, thank God.
To carry
I thought you were gonna say something like
you never know where my stories are gonna go.
Jules and Carla were like, yo, you get it.
No, exactly the opposite. You guys sprinted like there was a prize to who could get to the farthest goal to move. And I was like
competitive with our goal moving.
Yeah. I'm a 17-year-old kid and I'm like, man, these people like to move goals. I'm just going to like have a sip of water while they're moving the goals. But it took me a while and I was like, wait, no one enjoys moving goals. And, you know, I realized in that moment that they were demonstrating to me servant leadership, and that no job was too big or too small for the two leaders of our team to do. Not only did they move a goal, because they could have easily moved the closest goal that had to go the shortest distance, they sprinted, and like, I'm not just like a lazy jog, they literally sprinted to the goal. Like it is, this is ingrained in my memory, and carried it, to where Tony wanted it. And so that for me was one moment. And then another one was Jules and Carla were so great at getting to know each player, because, you know, if you don't invest in the people and you don't get to know them, then they're not going to listen to you. They're not going to have the, you're not going to get the most out of them. And, you know, leadership and telling people what they need to do or trying to push people to do things, if you don't know the people and if they don't know that you care about them, then it feels more like dictatorship than leadership. And so those two things from Jules as well as Carla have just really stuck with me.
What's the quote? They don't care about what you know until they know you care.
I think it's,
is that right?
They don't care what you know until they know how much you care. They don't care how much you know until you, they know how much you care.
That's good. That's good. Aw, teammates. Nice. The thing I always tell about CP is that I use this example a lot at the Leadership Academy. And when I'm talking about why our teams were successful, and you go down, literally, you go down the line of the teams that have won and been successful, and it's always the players from 1 to 20 on the roster get it. And CP, whether she was starting, whether she was on the bench, and she had, you had a period, was it 99, actually?
I don't know where you're going with the story.
Oh, sorry.
I know we're teammates, but I still can't read your mind.
When you would like, you'd start a game and then you'd be on the bench the next game. And then you'd start a game and then you'd be on the bench. It was like this kind of this roller coaster. And I could
welcome to life doing CBAs.
Yeah. Well, and it was your period on the national team where you would start and then you'd sit and you'd start. And for a lot of players that becomes a negative in a sense that they're like, oh, I'm not starting again, or oh, I sure. can't believe this coach is not putting me in, right. He's putting me on this roller coaster, and yeah. It's up and down, up and down. Cindy was just always so steady, and it's like you knew she wanted to be starting, But she was never going to complain about it. She wasn't going to sit on the bench sulking. And how many times have we seen that, the person on the end of the bench sulking because they're not starting? Instead, she was just like, I'm here to make you better. If I'm not in, I'm here to make you better. And that's when I was like, oh, my love for Cindy knows no bounds, because that's hard. People, especially at a young age, you were young. You started really young on the national team, as you mentioned, 17. So to be able to put that into place that early and be like, I'm here, I'm all in, and I'm buying it, and the we is greater than the me.
So, yeah, I don't think I started there.
No one does. But you got there.
Yeah.
And not many people get there.
I think that was from you all's leadership, because I don't think I was there when I got to the national team. I don't think I was a great teammate all growing up, because I was so focused on doing what I needed to do. I always just wanted to be the best at everything that I was doing, that I didn't always look out for my teammates and seeing and looking outside of myself and thinking about how I can help my teammates. And it wasn't until I got to the national team, and that was demonstrated what good leadership is, what a good teammate is. And it was demonstrated by you and Carla and Mia and like all of our teammates, that even though the 17-year-old kid coming in that could take one of our spots, that you guys took the time to reach out to me to try to make me feel as comfortable as I could as soon as I could, knowing that one day I could take your spot or someone else's spot. Like, it just meant the world to me. And so it really made me want to be a better teammate, want to be a better person, because I had realized that I hadn't done that for my teammates on my previous teams. And I think that's really what drove me into coaching.
So it seems we can do a thread that someone who experienced that culture is so cognizant of how meaningful that culture is now trying to shift an entire sport toward that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think there's a lot in there to unpack, but, you know, I think one thing for me, someone asked me what's two things that bring you joy, and one of them was celebrating other people's success. I really suck at celebrating my own successes, but I really love watching other people succeed and celebrating them.
That's like one of my favorite traits in humans.
What?
When you can celebrate others. It's so important.
I agree. Mm-hmm. But it also requires you to see the value in others as well. And to not be jealous, that, because I know there's so many people that are so much better at me than a lot of things. So to be able to value each individual within a team, like our CFO just won CFO of the year in Chicago. And like, she sent me her speech and like pictures. And it was like, it just made my day. Like to see her being celebrated was fantastic for me. But I think that's the culture from the national team. Like, everyone wanted to be a starter. You won't talk to any athlete that didn't want to be a starter. But that didn't mean that you were hoping that the player that is playing in front of you broke her ankle so that you could get in. You wanted her to be successful, because if she's successful, the team's successful.
This is why I love the 99ers. Just the greatest team in the history of sports, well, period.
You're a little biased, but we
are. I've hung
but
around.
Of course we are.
And that leads me into the Lynn game.
Oh, no.
Which is going to be, I'm bringing it back, this is becoming a tradition. If there is a 99er on the pod, it's going to be a Know Your 99ers Lynn game.
I got this.
We have a choice of squeaky toys, since you were the guest, Cindy. Would you prefer the green pig or the chocolate frosted donut?
You know, I love Jules, so I can't take the donut away from her. So I'll go with the squeaky pig.
Oh, Swaggy will love you. She loves greenie. She loves little greenie.
I think you know the game, because you are a part of the Dope Village. Five questions, all multiple choice, best of five wins. And here is question one. According to Wikipedia, how tall is Mia Hamm?
Oh.
Is she A, 5'5", B, 5'5 and a quarter,
oh,
or C, 5'6"?
You got it.
We have video evidence. Go to bar. 5'5", 5'5 and a quarter, or 5'6".
Those are the options.
I am going with 5, 5 1/4 because I think you would love that.
Incorrect.
Oh, shoot.
I think she's 5'4".
She might be.
Because I'm 5'11 1/4". So everyone seems a little short to me. But I'm going to say that she said she was 5'6".
Incorrect. According to Wikipedia, Mia Hamm is 5'5" tall.
Okay.
Love you, Meech.
Question two. When is Brandi Chastain's birthday? Is it A, May 1st, B, June 13th, or C, July
20th? You're both waiting for it. I got it again. The last one. C. Oh my God. We have birthday threads going all the time. We know everyone's birthday.
Was that Julie? Did she get in? Yeah.
It was her.
Okay.
Integrity. When you close the gap between
what you say and what you do.
Jenny Levy. Okay.
And the answer? Your answer?
C.
Oh, okay. I didn't even hear you say C. Oh, it was just so... Okay. Correct.
Said it.
I know. She's right.
Mm-hmm. Question three. Where was Carla Overbeck born?
Texas.
Incorrect. Is it A?
Incorrect.
So it goes to Julie.
Okay.
Bismarck, North Dakota. B, Torrance, California. Or C, Pasadena, California. Julie.
Pasadena, California.
Correct.
I mean, I didn't know it was there. I knew it was Torrance there, but I guessed it right.
She lived in Texas, though.
She did. I forgot.
Question four. How long did Christine Lilly play for the national team?
Wait, she's still on the national team. She's not playing anymore?
Yeah, I think she is.
Is it A, 23 years, B, 25 years, or C, 27 years?
Okay, wait, let's do the math real quick. Well, I got in first, so then I could do the math.
Julie, I'm putting okay. you... Five,
okay, look at Wikipedia.
Yeah. Four, three, okay,
87
two.
To like 25 years.
Incorrect.
What are my two numbers left?
23 years or 27 years?
23.
Correct. Question five.
Okay.
We might need a tie break. Question five. Where did Kate Markgraf go to college?
Notre Dame.
Oh, come on. It's so easy.
Why can't...
I thought it was going to be where was she born. I was waiting.
Or middle name.
Okay.
So tiebreak. I'm really excited for this. Yeah. We're going to do rock, paper, scissors, a tiebreak in real life, in person.
Oh, wait, what? We are?
Yeah.
We're not squeaking?
No, it's rock, paper, scissors. It's 2-2. Okay. This is ruined. It's like penalty shots. Okay.
Rock, paper, scissors. Then you go on shoot.
Okay, I got you.
You got it?
I got you.
I'm kind of stressed. I'm sweating.
It's not worth sweating over.
I'm stressed.
Equal pay is something to stress over.
I really like to win this game.
And you don't do it very often.
I'm not president. I have nothing else to stress about. Okay, ready? Rock, paper, scissors, shoot!
Cindy Parlo takes rock, paper, scissors with scissors over paper.
2-0 as well.
Takes the Lynn game.
Yeah? Don't ever count me out, Jules.
Oh, my God!
Don't tell me I can't do something.
How about some most pressing questions?
Most pressing questions.
What book should everyone read?
Ooh, that is a great question. I'm going to go with The Power of One.
Bryce Courtney.
Yep.
The best.
And all his other books are great as well.
That's so good. That's my favorite too. When did we read that? We read that on the national team together at some point. I remember when we all had, Colleen. It all comes back to Flash.
Dr. Colleen.
Yeah, Flash, I think she recommended that to us.
I read it before then.
Did you?
Yeah.
Best Tennessee accent.
Oh, you want me to do my best Tennessee accent?
Yeah, because I love it. I love it. I really love it. Sandy, I love it.
Yours is terrible.
Sandy, it's your mama. Call me. That was the voicemail I always got.
You know, sometimes when I call home, I just have to turn on my accent so people can understand me there.
Do you really, like, when you go home, do you really have to change how you talk?
No, I don't.
You don't? Oh, come on, I was joking. I think you should. That'd be good.
Why?
Because.
You saying I need to change who I am?
Change you.
What about this interview has made you believe that?
You be you, Cindy. Aw, that's good. All right. High, low, cheer. High of your career, Cindy. Low of your career. And then someone you're thankful for who's helped you along the way.
So high of my career is probably joining the women's national team, because quite literally it changed the course of my life. Mm. The friends that I've met, the education that I received, the confidence that I built, the leadership skills, friends for life. And it has literally helped put me in the position that I am in today to impact positive change.
Mm. That's a good one. Low?
I mean, it's kind of a tie between Meg Linehan's report and the Yates report. As we've talked about, like, it's so personal for me, and so, I mean, for all of us that care about our sport and care about people or women in general. But it's just, it has been so devastating to read about a sport that I've dedicated my life to, people that I care deeply mm-hmm. about to have to go through this. But on the flip side of it, like I said in my first answer on the high, like, I'm also thankful that I'm in a position to create positive change.
Indeed you are. Cheer.
Can I have two cheers?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would say my national team teammates, excluding Jules.
I was like, oh.
Yeah, no. You know, when I joined the national team, it was the first time that I really felt at home. It was the first time that I felt like, or that I knew that there were other people, other women out there like me. And throughout my entire life, from the moment I joined the national team at 17 to today, you guys are my rock. Like you, when things have been really bad during the presidency, you guys are who I turn to this day. And so you all have been there for me every step of the way, cheering me on, lifting me up when I needed it, putting me in my place when I need it. So that's one cheer. And my other cheer is for my husband. He's always been super awesome, but especially during the last 2.5 years, he's just really been my rock. He's taking on a lot more at home because I'm working so much. And, you know, he just knows me so well. Like, he can tell, like, when we're laying in bed at night, how I'm breathing, like, my level of stress.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
You know, and then when the Sally Yates report came out, it was hard for me to tell my part of that story. And, like, he didn't really, he's like, I want to do something for you, but I don't know what to do for you. Mm. So he went out and bought plants. He's like, and I'm like, plants? And he's like,
that is so adorable.
Isn't it? But you know me, I was like, plants, really? And he's like, I know, but I didn't know what to do for you, and I just wanted to do something.
Oh,
like,
my goodness.
Just,
like,
he's just unbelievable.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that's fantastic. And he's just been there and been my rock and has just really helped me, especially during the down moments of this presidency. But obviously he's been there for me much longer than just my presidency role. But those are my two cheers, yeah.
I'm going to add one. My cheer. I get a cheer.
Wait, you're changing the rules of your own game?
Yeah, because I can.
Okay.
And I will shout this from the rooftops till the day I die, but to have someone like you, I cheer you, because here we are in this really important time in our sport, and I think in the women's space,
And you've played the game, you've lived the game, you've coached the game at all these different levels. You understand people and empathy and all these elements that are going to go into changing the culture, as we've talked about in this entire podcast, and you are perfectly suited for that. And so I am so grateful that you, when elected as president, were like, yeah, a volunteer position, I'm on it. I'm going to do this and I'm going to embrace it and I am going to run with it because that's what you're doing, Send. And yes. Your legacy on what you're able to change beyond equal pay, but this next phase is something that is so needed and I couldn't think of a more perfect person to be in that position right now than you.
Thanks. I think Grant Wall wrote a great story about the 99ers and who would be probably the last person that you would choose from the 99ers to be president of U.S. soccer. And I think that was me.
Grant Wall is always wrong anyways.
He didn't say last, but definitely.
You're not always wrong, Grant. I like you just that time.
But thank you. But literally, I couldn't do what I'm doing without the support that I've been given and our staff at U.S. Soccer and players jumping on board.
We're cutting this off.
Okay.
I knew that was coming.
I wonder if there's a goal nearby that the two of you can go move together. I think that'd be a good way to end this.
I can't keep up with her and Carla. Like, they sprint to them.
Sprint. I'm going to sprint to the Bloody Mary table, actually.
Literally, that was my first training session. My first training session with the full national team.
Well, now we just literally sprint to the bar.
We don't sprint anywhere anymore.
We
hobble.
We limp. Drag a leg behind us.
First one to the Moscow Mule.
For the record, I beat her running to the mule. Not that I'm competitive. I still have knees. Love me some Cindy.
Yes.
Cindy, it's your mama. Call me. Takeaways. Lynn, you go first.
I feel that with Cindy at the helm of U.S. soccer, it is as though there is an adult in the room.
Mm-hmm.
She said, if the players aren't safe, nothing else matters.
Mm-hmm.
It's profound. And mm-hmm. I think she is the exact right person at this time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because who's going to put their kid into something where they don't feel like they're being protected or safe or taken care of? Yeah, and for me, what she's doing is so damn hard. On top of all that she's doing and has done with equal pay and what she's doing with the Sally Yates report and instilling some of these recommendations and what is going to come out to be systemic change in the game, she's coaching, she's parenting, she's traveling, she's doing this and volunteering her time for the good of the game. And that in itself should be a huge ass medal. I don't know what kind of medal it is, but put a medal around that woman because it is never ending. And I'm just super proud that she's able to do it all. And that, as I said, that she is the one that's in this position because she is going to lead us out of it.
How about instead of a medal, a large 6 to 7 figure salary?
Yeah, right? Facts. As the kids say, facts. Come on, let's get on that. This should not be a volunteer position. It actually went to a vote and I don't think it passed. I could be wrong on that, but I think in the last board meeting it went to a vote and it didn't get through the members. So questions permitted. What we got?
This question comes via Instagram from @witters_co. She asks, my 11-year-old daughter, Josie, has a question for Julie. What is your favorite place to buy donuts?
Yeah, Josie, talking my language. Most pressing questions. I love these.
Mm-hmm.
That is an easy one, Josie. My favorite place to buy donuts is this great little place in San Juan Capistrano called JD Flannel Donuts and Coffee. If you haven't been there, What's really convenient for those of you driving down the 5, you're heading south, heading towards San Diego, coming from wherever, you just pop off in San Juan, Google it. J as in Jules, D as in donuts. I think it actually stands for John David. And they do wear flannel. And it's so good. It's so good. Lynn, maybe not Lynn's favorite donut shop.
Well,
but don't let that dissuade you.
I wasn't going to say anything. I don't want to sell out JD Flannel.
That's just because you had a tummy ache.
I had a tummy ache that day, and I when I experienced JD Flannel. So for me, it's more surf and donuts in San Clemente that I would lean
which
toward.
Is very much that's also really good. I've been trying so hard to kick my donut addiction. I've been really good. But when we start talking about it, I start salivating. maybe even shaking. So.
Maybe even shaking.
Josie, thanks for that, Josie.
Well, and for the record, you've not, at least as far as I know, you have not eaten today.
No, I'm going to eat.
So,
really,
like, this is just talking donuts is getting your stomach gurgling.
Okay, before we go, Lynn.
Yes.
Aura Ring update, please.
Yes. Last episode, I said that based on my findings of the scores, I was going to focus on recovery between episodes. I definitely, through this experience, have seen that I have focused more on the sleep score than I have the readiness score. And the readiness score, it has been really telling me, hey, you need to take it easy. And it coincided, this whole thought experiment coincided with, I was sick, I had a cough for a couple of weeks, and then I traveled. But still, I do have this kind of new awareness of rest and recovery. So this past week, I did my best to dedicate 30 minutes a day to some R&R. One of the 30 minutes of R&R, for example, was I set an alarm on my phone and laid on my couch and watched TV, and I made myself not do anything else. Mm. And my body, it just sort of sank into the couch. And I could.
That's because it's a new comfortable couch.
It's a super comfy couch. But to kind of give myself a mental break of saying, no emails, no texts, no Instagram. Mm-hmm. You are laying here and zoning out. And it felt, I could feel it.
Yeah. It's almost you have to do like a blackout in terms of what I tell the kids, like screens off, phones off. That's good.
Interestingly enough, Sue Inquist was telling me how colleges now are beginning to have recovery rooms for athletes. So I think we're onto something here. Topic of conversation.
Something I'm not very good at. That does it for us in our dope village. And thank you for spending time with us. And thank you to our sponsors, as always, Ally and Dick's Sporting Goods, along with Kate Diaz for our theme music. We'll talk at you next week. Remember, as always, kids, sing it with us.
Laughter permitted.
I got you.
Hey there, Dope Village. Give a listen to the CJ McCollum Show, where every week New Orleans Pelicans star CJ McCollum discusses names and storylines in and around the NBA with inside perspective you can only get from someone in the locker room and on the floor. That's the CJ McCollum Show. Listen where you are listening to this podcast.